All right, morning. I will call us for the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, December 15th, 2015, and ask if everyone please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, thank you. Good morning. First item on our agenda is public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda. If there is anyone wishing to do so, please come up to the microphone. And seeing no one moving immediately to the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of minutes from December 8th.
Move approval.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Additions or corrections? Clinton.
Aye.
Two.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes passed. Personnel actions as listed, board.
Move approval. Second.
Motion and a second. Two.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions passed. Consideration of claims for the 17th.
Move approval as submitted.
Second.
Motion and a second on claims. Clinton.
Aye.
Two.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. For consent agenda, board, please add utility permit 1643 and 1645, and please remove item number 6, which is resolution 1615. We'll deal with that at a later date.
Okay.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
Motion and a second. Two.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. No public hearing items today. Additional items. And I think we'll hold this for just a minute because they're not here. So if board is okay with you, we're going to hold the first additional item until they arrive. And we'll move on to the next item. Jared, which is you. This is a minor subdivision, resolution 1622.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Okay, again, this is a resolution, a Lage minor subdivision plat. The property is located a half mile east of the city of Roland. The property is zoned A1 agricultural district. The first division was recorded in August of this year, and it consists of about 4.34 acres. The applicants are proposing to divide that 4.3-acre parcel into two separate parcels. One contains 3.5 acres. They're building a new single-family dwelling on that parcel, and I'll show you a plat plan of that. And that's a development lot. It's got frontage to the road. And then the second lot contains two existing accessory structures, and that is just west of that lot one. It contains 0.83 acres. The Lages have signed a restrictive covenant. You'll recall that this year we adopted a provision in our development regulations allowing accessory structures to be located on an adjacent parcel, provided that the ownership of both the development lot and the parcel containing the accessory structures is owned by the same party, and they have agreed not to further divide both of those parcels. Property surrounded by agricultural crop ground. We've got an aerial to show you that. The applicant does not own any of the adjacent parcels. The primary reason for this division has to do with financing to complete the construction of that single-family dwelling that, again, is located on that lot one or proposed lot one. We did route this to the other departments and obtained some feedback from the Environmental Health Division. The septic system is on lot one, and again, they're not planning to divide, or they're planning on keeping retaining ownership to both, but if they did sell it, and by the way, they'd have to go through the Planning and Development Department also to obtain permission or approval to change the ownership of that, but the Environmental Health Division is requesting that they get an easement if they did sell it. Either parcel is not located in the 100-year floodplain. We did send notices out before the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, December 2, and prior to this meeting, and we received no comments from the general public. This is a copy of the final plat, again, Lage subdivision. It's a 4.3-acre parcel. Again, they're proposing two lots, one containing the single-family residence, which is south-centrally located on that proposed lot one, and then the two existing accessory structures are located on lot two. They are meeting the setbacks of the county. This is that restrictive covenant document. It was signed by the applicants, signed by the staff, and this is a document that will be recorded with the other documents. Aerial location map to the left shows you the city of Roland corporate limits. To the right is the Lage subdivision property. Again, it's about a half mile distance. A little closer view, the residence that was on that parcel was built in 1960. It's been removed, as has been the parcel to the southwest, the two parcel or the two accessory structures to the south, and those corn cribs. The tree line along the north and along the west is still in existence on this parcel. We're into the site photos. There's a gravel drive extending back to the house. You see the accessory buildings to the right. That's the front of the house. You're looking at the two buildings. That's the back side of the residence. That's the east side of the largest accessory structure. Panning, now just looking to the south. Again, it's surrounded by ag ground. Looking to the west toward the city of Roland. Looking to the north, there you see that tree line. And then we're panning to the east. In summary, again, this was before the Planning and Zoning Commission, December 2 at their meeting. They did recommend approval of this minor subdivision plat with a vote of 7-0. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Yeah, just clarify for me, Jerry. This is... The intent here is simply to make the financing for the house work more smoothly. It's not the intention ever to truly split these two lots. I mean, even though we're going to...
It will be split, but correct. It has everything to do with financing. And if you have more questions about that, Mr. Lage is here this morning. And this is the best vehicle, the best process to accomplish that.
Okay. More questions, thoughts?
Just appreciate the work.
I would move approval of resolution 1622.
Second.
A motion on approval of 1622. Further discussion. Duke.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Resolution 1622 passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Now we'll go back and we will visit with Big Boss and Jan Flora on the possibility of Story County co-sponsoring the 2016 housing conference is coming up. Jan and Vic, come on up. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Take us through what you're asking of us.
We're we represent AMOS, Mid-Iowa Organizing Strategy, and we're recommending that the Story County Board of Supervisors be a sponsor of a conference on the 29th of March, for which you have a preliminary program. The program is not complete, but you have a picture of what kinds of sessions there will be, although the individuals in each session may end up being different than what we've tentatively put in some cases. And the purpose of the conference is to sort of bring together Story County in terms of working on housing stability. And we call it housing stability rather than affordable housing, because affordable housing is such an expandable term. What we mean by housing stability is the opportunity for people to live in a home without having to move frequently and being able to afford, whether it's rental or purchase or owner-occupied home, to be able to afford to not only pay their rent if they're renters, but also to afford the basic necessities of life. So I wanted to just point you toward the highlighted parts, pages 2 and 3. So there are three sessions that I highlighted that relate specifically to the county as a whole. The first one is a brief look backward and a look forward on what efforts there have been made in the area of low-cost housing in Story County. The second one would be one that would involve mayors or other leaders from various communities, rural communities in Story County, to discuss the issues that they see with respect to housing. And then on the third page, there's one on transportation. And to some degree, one can look upon the effectiveness of public or collective transportation as a trade-off with housing costs. So we want to look at the transportation aspects of housing in that session. So and we're going to make a big push to get as many leaders from the rural communities to attend the conference. And the other one that I didn't highlight is the luncheon event, which is titled Local Housing Trust Funds, Why They're Needed and What We Have Accomplished in Iowa. And the idea there is to get people to thinking about possibly having a housing trust fund in Story County and perhaps adjacent counties along with Story, which would allow for a permanent a body that is widely representative, that would be a permanent have a permanent concern for questions related to low-cost housing in Story County. So I think that's, unless you have something to add, Vic.
No, I think that what you see is, you know, we're really getting this tied down in the next month or so, it looks like. This would be the first time anything of this magnitude has been tried. I know that the county's been involved with the city and doing a countywide housing program years ago. But this time we have Iowa State on board too, and that's maybe been the key factor that was lacking in this. When they agreed to sponsor this too, I think we really have the powers that be, if the county joins in on this, to really add some thought to whatever happens. The eventual body would be, it's going to be a separate body, but it could have representatives from the county on it. The board can't have a majority of public officials on that, and that's the only stipulation. But other than that, I think it right now is the best thing going for trying to improve the housing situation.
Thoughts? Questions, board? I think that my thoughts haven't changed from 2 weeks ago. When you gentlemen are here, I think it's a worthwhile endeavor. I had a couple of concerns then as far as follow-up and exactly what the county's role was going to be, but
I think you answered those a couple of weeks ago. So,
Beth, Wayne?
Yeah. What you have put here to me is kind of educational awareness. I don't think that any of us doubt that there is a serious need for affordable housing. Again, the definition of affordable is going to be that parameter. What I see this missing is what comes after the conference. If there is not going to be a group of stakeholders brought together to address, okay, what do we need to do? I mean, it's mentioned in here, it's talked about in here, but I think as a conference sponsors, as a group that's there, there needs to be some teeth put into it where you're going to pull together some of the key developers, identifying certain areas, either through city planning, county planning, where is the most likely location for affordable housing to be developed, and try to get some type of buy-in, either a short-term planning, whether it's 6 months or longer, where you can try to move the needle. Because to just to have a conference and talk about all of this, and which is great, it's not solving the problem. And I believe at some point we've got to have that next phase. And that phase is a commitment from some of our developers, some of our city planners, whether it be city council, whether it be county boards of supervisors, planning and development groups, other entities, from public-private, because I see it as a public-private partnership. I think there, it almost has to be, the way we know that the available land is administered here. So I'd just like to suggest that before you finalize all of this, just try to strategically think about what is it you hope to accomplish after the conference by putting in place a plan to accomplish, you know, our objective, whether we're talking 3 to 5 years or whatever. To me, would have a much more of a teeth into what we're trying to do. Earlier, last time, we talked about financially contributing to this, and whether it's something we've never quite done, but yet we've never, as you say, tackled a topic such as this where there is a need. We've recognized, through transportation and getting people to and from work and all of that, that, you know, that's a major issue, and both city and county has been working in that area for a long time. So I think the concept of affordable housing, as you've laid it out here, certainly has merit, could be something that could be beneficial. But I want to see us go beyond just a public awareness, an educational component, identifying what we already know type of thing.
Wayne, I think you're 100% right. And I think the follow-through and follow-up on whatever is done is going to be vital. But a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step.
Oh, yeah.
And this,
that's right. This
to me, seems like a really solid step. I think it's completely appropriate for the county to partner with Iowa State and the city of Ames in pulling this together. I appreciate you guys' recognition that this is bigger than just a municipal city limits of Ames issue. And there are factors, transportation being a really notable one. I think pulling in our smaller town leaders, our mayors and the business community from our smaller towns is going to be vital because we do have affordable housing in Story County. We just don't have a great transportation infrastructure in place to be able to readily transport people from our smaller towns into our largest employer, which is clearly Ames and Iowa State. So I appreciate the conversation that you guys had 2 weeks ago in my absence. I'm I'm thankful that you guys have included me in the final decision making. But Paul, in reading through the minutes from 2 weeks ago, I was really comfortable with where you came down, and I was wondering if you're still in the same position, and if you are, let's go.
Yeah, I'm like I said 2 weeks ago, I'm comfortable at $2,500 with the knowledge that if you gentlemen decide that, you know, you're going to need a little bit more to get you over the finish line, come back and see us. But I'd like to put a cap on that at $5,000. So my motion would be funding the amount of $2,500 initially with a cap not to exceed $5,000 if the need is there.
I will second the motion.
Okay, and then I would like to have somebody as part of the planning team. I would ask if Deb Shildroth could be our representative from the county. Deb, can I get you? You're affirming that that'd be all right with you if you represent us. Board, would you be okay with Deb being our representative in the planning of this?
Absolutely.
Paul, you're good with that as part of your motion?
Yes.
All right. Further discussion? Fulton?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes at $2,500 with a maximum of $5,000. We're happy to be a co-sponsor along with Iowa State City Mains, and thank you, gentlemen, for bringing this to us.
Yeah. Could I just respond to Wayne's comments?
Absolutely. Please do.
And I first wanted to say that we already have a place for Deb in the planning process. The commitment of EMIS is to talk with all of the relevant partners before the conference, and that very last session, which may need to be elongated a little bit, will be where we will make a commitment to further the work, and that will probably involve having a group of people forming a temporary committee that perhaps would lead to a housing trust fund or other activities. So we hear you loud and clear.
Well, Jan, no disrespect intended, but I've attended quite a number of your AMOS functions. And to just have elected leaders and representatives stand up and say, yes, we're supportive and we think this is a great idea, is one thing. It's not moving the needle. And that's what I'm looking for, is I'm looking for, beyond just the commitment, that we are going to form the committee, we identify who these people are going to be, we're setting some type of parameters in the planning stage so we can come back either to city, county, developers, whatever, saying, yes, we've identified, you know, these particular areas, and we're going to try to set a timetable by which, you know, 1 to 2 years down the road, even if we see one development started down. What our goal basically is, it's kind of like what we're doing at the county level with two strategic planning. I mean, yeah. I see this as a encompassing a tremendous need, and not only that, I think even some of our employers could really get behind something of this nature, because again, there are various jobs that employees do need, and not everybody is going to be coming in at that, you know, 90 and plus salary range. So that's what my suggestion was basically there, is try to firm that commitment up into definite action.
Yeah.
Okay.
Super. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Next item on our agenda is discussion and consideration of proposed Story County funding.
Did you take a roll call before I get on?
Yeah, we did. And then he just came back.
Passed unanimously.
You bet. Thank you, gentlemen.
Discussion and consideration of proposed Story County funding for FY17 asset request. And this is Deb Shildroth. Good morning, Deb.
The agencies going through the asset process have submitted their budgets for fiscal year 17, and I've had a chance to go through those budget books. You each have a copy of those books as well to read at your leisure. So what you have before you is a spreadsheet showing the provider service, which county fund they access services through, whether it be general basic, local option, or the pass-through dollars through public health, what the service is, what we're budgeting for the current fiscal year, and then what their request is and the percent of change. And there are just a few things I wanted to point out in terms of some of the larger requests. And so I'm going to start with transportation. It's line 18, and that's Central Iowa RSVP program. There's a bump there because they are looking at adding a coordinator who's just going to focus on coordinating the volunteer driver program. That program continues to grow by leaps and bounds, and they need a dedicated staff person to help organize that and keep it tracking in the direction it needs to go. The next service is through legal aid, their civil service, and that's line 30. That is about a 25% increase in their ask of the county. The reason behind that is they are asking for less funds through the Central Iowa Community Services region for next fiscal year. The reason behind that is that there are certain cases that legal aid assists with that the region has said they will not fund. Those cases include divorce and any child or custody-related kinds of cases. And so the funding requests that go to the city and the county and United Way have been increased as a result of the region's decision on which cases they will fund and will not fund. If you turn to the next page, lines 52 and 53 under youth and shelter services, those are existing services within YSS, but they're new requests, funding requests of the county under general basic funds. And then lines 54 and 55, youth and shelter services, their transitional housing program. That's a program that's been in place for a number of years. It's a new service into the asset process that they're asking funds for from the county, United Way in the city. And then underneath that is the human trafficking. That is a new public education and awareness service that they have been doing quite a bit of marketing on for the past year. They have a grant from Rotary this current fiscal year to fund at least a part-time coordinator, but it's a new service in the asset process that they're asking funding for. And let's see, if we drop down to local option, line 75, the Salvation Army, emergency with basic needs. What this is rent assistance, that they're and these are dollars that they're requesting that they help with individuals outside the incorporated areas. It's a service that's already been in the asset process, but it is a new request for local option funding. And I think those are the main ones. You will also see on this spreadsheet, I did separate out, and this is just for transparency sake, the services that we are going to be transferring from juvenile court to the asset process. Those are county general fund dollars that will be transferred starting with fiscal year 17. But I wanted to give kind of a clearer picture as far as what those services are. That dollar amount is $99,000 for the current fiscal year. The request is up 3.81% to $102,776. But again, those are general fund dollars. The overall increase of asking for general fund is about 14%, and then for local option, it's about 38%. Any questions or comments at this point?
So the idea behind this, of course, is this, at this point, it's laying out the proposals. Will the asset team and so forth be scrutinizing again the request a little bit further, trying to look at what is the more reasonable dollar amount? and then bringing that back at a later time for recommendations or approval by the entity, say the county, the city, GSB, etc. And part of my question is just like in the example of just not picking on this group, but just using the example of the lost funding of the Salvation Army request, people living outside of the corporate limits, again, is that they're needing to have identify who the number of individuals prior to, rather than saying, here's an X number of dollars that's sitting there and it's going to be used. In the past, you know, it's a way of identifying the need of the service need and the number of individuals served. Are we still looking at something very similar to that, or is this the request to find out what the need is? Kind of a what term am I want to use? Where they haven't really identified, but they think there is a group out there, and it's going to take X number of dollars to find out how many people are really going to need rental assistance, is what I was getting to at.
The agencies have submitted their budgets, and so these are proposed requests from the agencies. It's what they think they're going to need for fiscal year 17. And going back to your earlier question, Wayne, about this being further scrutinized, the process being is the county sets up kind of a proposed amount that I take back to the asset volunteers, and we have the hearings coming up in January and then the panel work sessions, and they work within that proposed amount. And then they make recommendations, so they do their scrutinizing after the hearings. They make their recommendations, and then I bring those recommendations back to you as a board for final consideration, and then we take that figure and add that into the county's budget. And I share that information with Lisa, so she has that to add into the budget. So it's a proposed figure at this point in time. The asset volunteers make the recommendations, and they do the scrutinizing. And kind of using your example of the Salvation Army and the request through lost funds, one of the things that I'll be sharing with the volunteers when they are looking at this particular service is that the county already provides dollars through our general assistance program, through Veterans Affairs, and actually through the region, so our contribution to the mental health region to help with rent and utilities. So we're already doing that directly through those three programs. So, you know, we're already meeting some of that need through what the county is doing and is, at least through general assistance, is required to do. So does it make sense then to...
It's hard to justify duplication of services that are already being provided.
Exactly.
You know, and in fact, that is a basic premise behind ASSET, is to make sure we're not duplicating services.
Right.
I just want to step back and remind us where this board has been since the three of us got together 5 years ago. At that point, the asset budget, specifically in general fund dollars, had not moved a whole lot in recent history. And I believe that now when you include the $99,000 that's coming over from JCS, which is not new dollars, but it's new to our general fund asset dollars, I believe we've gone from about $400,000 5 years ago to now we're at $649,000. We've made a substantial investment into the asset process. We've become, in terms of dollars, a co-equal partner with the City of Ames and Iowa State. It's very, very close in terms of what we're all, the skin we all have in the game. I just don't believe it's reasonable. Last year we went up 10%, right? We went from $500,000 to $550,000, and then you add the $99,000 in for JCS. I mean, it's a huge, not to sound like Donald Trump, it's a huge increase. We can't. But that's not sustainable. That is not sustainable. Every time I say huge now, I think of Donald Trump. It's unbelievable. I can't say the word without thinking of him. We can't continue on that trajectory. City of Ames, I think, just approved a 5% increase, if I'm not mistaken.
5.5.
I believe that we need to be in a very similar place. I believe our budget can handle a very similar place. I don't think it can handle a whole lot more. So what I'm proposing for us to direct Deb to go back to the asset volunteers is when you add the $550,000 and the $99,000 together, that's $649,000, I'm looking for a maximum increase of next year of 5.5%, which is somewhere in the $34,000 range that I think we can afford to do. And then we trust our asset volunteers to determine where those dollars are most appropriately utilized. That's where I believe we should be. That's what I believe our budget can accommodate. It's a long way from the 14% that's being requested, but I think it's a completely reasonable increase given the circumstances.
Well, and I appreciate your analysis and working with Deb and looking back at the past and where we have gone. And we have tried to be responsive to the needs based upon the process that's currently in place. And I think this is certainly a reasonable place for us to begin. Now, whether we end up exactly right there or not, we still have an opportunity to take a look at that based on hearing the final report that comes through. But I think it does provide a clear target as to where we think we would like to be. And hopefully we will come close to accomplishing that. But I think the analysis that you just shared with us, Rick, is right on, and I definitely appreciate that. I know this is an area that you do a very good job of working with the auditor's office and Deb and so forth, and looking at the financial impact to the county and what our capacity is, and I certainly do appreciate that.
Thank you, Wayne. And just to clarify, if we went with a maximum of 5.5% increase, that would be an increase of $35,695 in general fund dollars.
Yeah.
I agree with your analysis also on the 10%. The 10% is not sustainable. I don't think anybody honestly believes it would be. But the 5.5% is doable, and I think it's better than we have been years past. So
it matches what the City of Ames is able to do, which in a partnership, I think that's important that we all try to have equal skin in the game. Deb?
Well, and I wanted to make a comment, too. As far as the funding itself, how it's drawn down is on a per-unit basis.
Right.
So we get all the information on a regular basis. So that part of the process will continue for the county. We have contracts, of course, and so we'll continue.
And just because the dollars are available doesn't mean they're always utilized.
Exactly. And we've had years before where not all of the dollars were allocated. In fact, this current fiscal year, we still have about $108 in local option dollars that were not allocated. So that can happen. And then we may face possible uses related to human services for those dollars at a later time. But
sure.
It does put that out there as an option for folks.
So what... are we at a point, as Wayne was talking about, clearly this is at the point where our asset volunteers start to put the numbers together? I know we have ultimate approval after that fact. Do you need formal action from us, or was the direction that we just gave enough for you to go back and talk to the asset volunteers?
If I could have formal action, that would be helpful. And then I know the City of Ames has acted on it. The United Way Executive Board acts on their request or their allocation this Thursday, as does the Regional Governing Board.
All right. So Board, where we are at this point is just talking about general fund dollars, and if one of you guys is comfortable with what we talked about, put it in the form of a motion.
I'll make a motion that we set the increase for asset from general fund dollars, the amount not to exceed 5.5%.
Second.
Motion and second. Just clarification, that includes both the traditional general fund dollars and the new $99,000 that came over from JCS.
Right.
Correct. Further discussion? Two.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. So the 5.5% increase in general fund dollars to asset has been approved. Local option sales tax, the request of 37%. again, not even close to sustainable. Lost dollars actually concern me. We got Auditor Martin here today. Lost dollars actually concern me as much as anything. I don't know that there's capacity there to do much of any kind of increase. I think it's important that we try. And so I'm suggesting that we go as a working number from 15,000 this year to 16,000 next year, and our volunteers have to try to figure that out. I think we can find another $1,000 in loss, although, I mean, it's tight.
Yeah.
I'll make a motion then to increase the amount from the local option sales tax for asset, $1,000 increase.
You said $10,000 or
$1,000.
$1,000. That's what I thought.
$1,000. Second. We have a motion to second. Further discussion? Two.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Increase in lost dollars from $15,000 to $16,000. Public health funds, what do you need from us? I mean, that pass-through dollars. The state's going to determine what's coming in.
Exactly, yeah. I just put a number out there as a guideline for the volunteers, but because those dollars are pass-through dollars from the state, we normally don't find out until about May or June, Well after the process, as far as what's available.
Okay. Any action from us necessary on that? Okay. Anything else as it relates to asset for us today?
Thank you for your continued support of funding and support of the process as a whole.
Well, please pass along to not only Story County volunteers, but all the asset volunteers, how much we appreciate their service. I say it again and again. The asset process that we have here in Story County ends with United Way and the GSD, and now the Central Iowa region. It is a phenomenal process. It's governments working together better than most governmental entities ever work together. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next is an agency report from our friend Keith Morgan in emergency management, who's been dealing with flooding here the last couple days. Where's the snow, Keith?
Be glad it wasn't down on Somerset.
Yeah. What would it have been, like 40 inches?
A lot more than we would have wanted to deal with. And as you point out, I've got to kind of modify what I sent up to you. Responses has gone from none to starting on Sunday morning when the first flash flood warning came out. The recent heavy rains did produce some flood warnings across the county. And we worked with first responders and the public works of Story City, Ames, and Cambridge to monitor the situation. So far, it looks like things are working out well for us with respect to flooding here. On the planning side, we've been doing a lot of planning in the past 3 months. First off, the Roland Story School District Superintendent reached out and requested the EMA office assist with the development of their Emergency Operations Plan, EOP. As part of the planning process, the EMA facilitated a walkthrough and evaluation of the three school campuses by Iowa Homeland Security critical infrastructure staff. The work walkthrough focused on the vulnerabilities and such as access control and comprehensive emergency plans, and the Iowa Homeland Security, when requested, will conduct similar walkthroughs and evaluations of buildings that are considered to be critical infrastructure of a community or the county. Parallel with that, the Iowa Department of Education has also recognized the importance of schools developing comprehensive operations plans. On December 3rd, the coordinator and deputy attended a day-long EOP planning session along with Ames, Ballard, Nevada, and Roland Story school districts. During the training, the Department of Education provided planning guidance and templates to help schools to develop plans. The schools, during this training session, asked emergency management to form a working group to facilitate collaboration between the schools as they build their plans, and were excited about working with them on this in the future. As you've heard me say before, command, control, and coordination are an essential mission of the Emergency Management Office during a disaster. To build redundancy into this mission, we continue to work with facility management and information technology to establish a backup emergency operations center location. An evaluation of potential locations throughout the county determined that the large conference room in the Health and Human Services building would be the best location for an alternate EOC should the administration building and primary EOC become unusable. If there is a catastrophic event that renders the administration building unusable, other county offices would also have to move. And the conference room over at HSC building would be prime real estate for these offices to reestablish their operations. Given this potential conflict, we are asking the Board of Supervisors to work with the Emergency Management Office to formalize an agreement to grant us first access to the conference room space should an alternate EOC be needed. On November 24th, the EMA office hosted the first meeting of the Emergency Medical Response Committee. The goal of the committee is to develop a process to determine if there is a current or potential capability gap in our emergency medical response system. During the meeting, the stakeholders helped develop questions to quantify both what creates the demand and the current capacity of the different parts of the system. Then the committee identified which agencies held the needed data and their ability to access and gather the information. Our first milestone for this committee was to have the data gathered by January 31st, 2016, to start the evaluation of the system. But it's evident that this timeline will need to be extended to ensure that we have a comprehensive and accurate data gathering process. As a reminder, the committee was brought together at the request of the jurisdictional executives that make up the Emergency Management Commission. The goal of this committee is to evaluate the system from the 911 call all the way through the patient being delivered to the hospital. Our recommendations, or the recommendations of the committee, I should say, will then be presented back to jurisdictional executives for their action. The EMA met with the Director of Planning and Development to discuss their role as a part of the county's response during a disaster. One important issue identified for further action was disaster assessment and recovery for the unincorporated areas, which include your unincorporated subdivisions and mobile home parks. This was an interesting problem that we started to look at, and we're going to work with planning and development to enhance their ability to meet the needs of citizens in these areas. On the preparedness side, on October 16th, the coordinator, along with members from the Story County Amateur Radio Emergency Service Group, participated in a functional communications exercise at Camp Dodge. The exercise brought together local, state, and federal communications assets in order to become familiar with their communications capabilities and to test interoperability and how these groups would establish a common operating picture. Continuing to work with other local, state, and federal agencies to ensure interoperability of communications before disaster strikes will enhance the local capability to provide rapid response within Story County. On October 25th, the deputy coordinator participated in an exercise with Gilbert Fire, EMS, Story County Ambulance, and the Martin Marietta Mine. The focus of the exercise was communications, search and rescue, development of a unified command, and awareness for new members. With business as unique as the mine, it's important that the overall response expectations are developed ahead of the emergency. Developing the relationships with first responders and local businesses with unique processes before an emergency increases the capability of everyone to focus on the emergency at hand and provide a rapid resolution to the emergency. On October 31st, the EMA office conducted the annual I-35 closure drill. Running the drill prompted the different agencies to review their roles and responsibilities for this plan, and it also exercised essential communications processes associated with this plan. Improvements sparked by this year's drill allowed for refinement of the EMA's communications with response partners, evaluation of parking restrictions along South Dayton and Southeast 16th Street, and the addition of notification of I-35 closure for the county engineer. The closure plan represents ongoing public and private partnership with first responder agencies, the Red Cross, Ames Convention and Visitor Bureaus, the City of Ames, and Iowa State University. Building partnerships and ensuring agencies understand roles and responsibilities ahead of closure should speed and improve service to the traveling public. The common thread across most exercises has been the value of interoperable communications, which is something the county should continue to work towards. There are very inexpensive first steps responders and support agencies can take, such as actively integrating the national interop radio frequencies into their communications. Collaborative planning for long-term development in areas of communications, such as the state 700 megahertz system, FirstNet, and the need to replace the current trunk radio system will be essential to ensuring that we can maximize connectivity at a price affordable to all agencies. On the training side, emergency management staff attended the Iowa Homeland Security Conference and Hazardous Materials Symposiums in October. Two presentations that could have local impact were the avian influenza and ethanol train derailment. The avian influenza presentation centered on how cooperation and communications with local, with the local level did or did not work well during the state and federally managed event, and how issues such as logistics of carcass disposal was difficult as it spanned all levels of government. The coordinator has been a part of a state-level team that is looking at how we can better plan, train, and exercise for one of these events. We have a major rail line that runs through the county, and lessons identified at the Hazmat Symposium during the presentation on an ethanol train derailment in Dubuque County have direct applications to our county. During the difficult response to this event, interoperable communications with Canadian Pacific Railroad, the logistics of reaching the derailment site, and a prolonged response and recovery time which taxed local volunteer fire departments were all issues. An event like this could be a major test of Story County's disaster response structure should it happen in an unincorporated area, and it could be an excellent scenario for an exercise for the Story County administration. You've heard us say it before, well-trained personnel to staff our EOC will be essential. Since the start of our efforts to train and exercise EOC staff, we've lost some of our personnel to turnover. To rectify this, the deputy coordinator conducted training for new EOC staff on November 11th, and we did continuation training for our current staff. Again, thank you to the Board of Supervisors, to department heads and elected officials for continuing to support our efforts through the use of county employees to staff our EOC. Looking ahead, after 3 years of applying for grant funding to upgrade communications for the primary EOC, Iowa Homeland Emergency Management Division confirmed that Story County UMA will receive requested funds. The grant will improve communications and situational awareness with the update of information displays and the addition of video teleconferencing within our EOC. Video conferencing capability can be shared with other county departments that have a need. Communications is almost always an after-action item for exercises and response. This upgrade will increase our capability to have greater communications throughout a disaster and emergency. With that, I'd like to open it up to any questions you might have.
What are you doing in your spare time?
You want to answer that one?
I have a few things that I do.
Okay. On the conference room in the human services building, the big multi-purpose room, I believe, is what you're referring to, and you've asked us to enter into an agreement with emergency management designating that you will have first priority of that room should the EOC center here, which is basically a bomb shelter in the basement, should it ever be inaccessible or unusable. Can that be handled through our COOP call planning, or do we need to take a step outside of that? I figure as part of the whole COOP call work, one of the things we're going to recognize is, okay, this building is rendered unusable. What would we do? Where would Auditor Martin go to continue providing her services to the people of Story County? And if we recognize it as part of that plan, does that accomplish your goal? I understand where you're coming from, that if this building is unusable, everybody's going to be thinking, oh, that's the perfect spot for me and the services I provide. And I have to agree with you that if we're in that situation, emergency management better come first until we get to the end of the crisis.
Formally adopted COOP COG, I could see as being a good avenue for that. It would have the same strength as any MOA, MOU that we would do. What I would like is something to survive me, you, and everybody else that's around here 5 years from now. It is something that also, as a part of the review of an MOU or a COOP COG, it is refreshed in everybody's mind that this is what the plan is, so that it doesn't become a surprise at 2 a.m. in the morning when we really have to get up and get going quickly.
If it was 2 a.m. in the afternoon, we'd all have problems.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, well, then I would ask that you work with Leanne and Ethan on making sure that that's part of the COOP cog as we work through. But in the interim, or in addition to, you're working with Ethan to make sure that that we can at least present some kind of MOU to the Board of Supervisors. Since we are, in fact, the controller of all county buildings, it would rest with us to make that determination and ongoing commitment.
And maybe that is a part, an appendix or an annex of an MOU that expands on out exactly what the terms are, would probably be just as our agency executes those with other agencies. Just, again, so it's right up front what's expected, and so that there's no...
Well, that's the last thing you need to be worried about.
Yeah, it definitely is, and it's a great lesson, and I'm glad you at least thought of that. Because if you go back and you think about Land County when they had the flooding over there and they all of a sudden had to relocate, you know, their whole operations in a different place. You know, luckily there were other businesses and entities that stepped up and said, hey, you know, we can do it here and there. But pre-planning and having it well thought out allows for a much easier transition and operation, because everybody then knows exactly where the lines are going to be, and those of us, and of course, and we hope that Rick and Paul never have to go through that, but I know in my tenure, I've had the opportunity on more than one occasion to be involved in the emergency center here through just disaster planning that has happened in Story County, we were fortunate in, back in the floods of 92 and 93 and 96 and so forth that we saw our ability to handle that much better. But there's nothing better than having some clear defined plans in place so that everybody knows that if this does happen, these are the things that are going to be the top priority. And but I agree with Supervisor Sanders. With that COOP cog and continuity of the operations, it just solidifies it even more. And in this case, it should be a document that would expand beyond the three of us as we move forward.
And as we continue through this process, what we're doing is what we would be doing in a very compressed timeline, which is evaluating a risk and finding the most effective and efficient manner of overcoming those risks. Like I say, we don't think of often that this building might be in a bomb shelter, but some of the things we need to concern ourselves, a hazmat release may make it so we can't get here.
Sure.
And all of us need to think about what we would do just in case.
Okay. Outstanding. Keith, thank you very much.
Thank you.
No departmental reports. Other reports, discussion of the C2C plan update, Chris Ganson and Shannon Gapp. Chris, I'm hearing great things about how you guys are going about your business, and we are sure appreciative.
Awesome. That's fantastic to hear. I was just taking notes on some of the stuff he was talking about that we could put into our policy statements, actually. We had a lot of goals in the emergency preparedness section that overlap that kind of thing, but there was a couple things that I picked out. So
outstanding.
Glad to be here. This thing... Got it. Get my PowerPoint running here real quick. I apologize.
Oh, no problem.
There we go.
The right side?
Let's see it over there. Finicky computer, huh?
Hard to act out a PowerPoint, but
I give it a shot. Thank you for having us again. Chris Canson with MSA Professional Services. With me is Shannon Gapp from Confluence. And we have a brief presentation. We'd be happy to take comments at any point, questions, whatever whatever you guys want, but we're basically going to run through today just a general project schedule update, give you guys an overview of where we're at in the process and what's to come, talk about the review draft documents and the general plan form at this point, and then also talk about upcoming meetings so that you guys are aware of what is upcoming and then can let your constituents know as they have questions and want to participate further in the plan. We are done with this first slide, which we started back in March, did a lot of the public input, did goals development, did our research analysis on existing conditions, that kind of thing. We've moved into the actual development of the plan. November, we had scheduled this meeting, but there was a little extra review by the Natural Resources Board and the Planning and Zoning Commission looked at this at their meeting earlier this month. And so we basically have a very similar presentation for you today that goes over that. And we had some comments from them. We had some comments from the project team this morning that we'll be updating the draft documents with. And same thing from you, whatever you guys have. Whatever you come up with between now and the end of the plan, we'll be happy to put in there. But basically, what we have upcoming are plan review open houses next month. We have five of those scheduled. We have a C2C project task force meeting, which is that citizens task force made up of city representatives, organizational representatives from around the county, not just county staff. And then Planning and Zoning Commission work session in March. And they're hearing for recommendation, hopefully, in April. And then you guys would have a work session in May. And then hopefully look at adopting a plan in June. That's the schedule at this point. So ongoing and upcoming plan engagement opportunities. Of course, we have the website where all of these documents are at, all of the schedules are at, all that kind of stuff. That is c2cplan.com. County and planning development staff, the consultant team is available. We have project team meetings the first and third Tuesdays of the month at 8:30. We had one this morning. The next one will be on January 5th, 2016. We are preparing for those open houses, so that will be the primary objective of that first meeting of the project team in January. Citizen Task Force, again, the next and last one we have is February 11th. We are planning on having a day meeting for them starting at 11 o'clock and then having kind of lunch going through 1 o'clock. So hopefully get some great participation from those folks at the end of this plan so they can comment on all the drafts that have been out. It is my guess that they will participate in some of those public open houses that we'll have in January, come back with their comments in February. Planning and Zoning Commission meetings, again, March and April, Board Supervisor meetings in May and June. And then one of the other things we're adding is an online open house. That first open house, which is on January 19th in Zurich at the community center, the Deakins Community Center, we are going to tape that. So the way these will function is we're going to do like 15 to 10 minutes of kind of open house at the beginning, let people walk around, look at some boards, you know, look at what information we have, ask staff questions, get comfortable with room and the layout, that kind of thing. Then we're going to go through a 15 to 20 minute presentation on the plan and the elements and that kind of stuff. Get some highlights, obviously not go page by page, but generally kind of get them comfortable with what's in it, and then we will have a open house after that presentation as well, where we'll have some worksheets where they can fill out if they're the kind of folks that, you know, may not want to speak out, raise their hand in a meeting or approach somebody but have comments to provide, or we'll have staff and consultants available to answer any questions that people have before and after that presentation as well. We're going to tape that first one, put the posters online, and put the worksheet online that somebody can fill out and just go to the website, watch the 15-minute presentation, and if they're not able to come to one of those five open houses, they can see that same presentation and participate as well. Again, the website, scheduled meetings, they're on there. The times will be updated and that kind of thing, but we have been regularly making updates to those. That's probably the best place to go at this point if somebody was asking about, where are the meetings, where are they scheduled? If you just needed a quick answer, it would be just go to the website, c2cplan.com, and go to the scheduled meetings. Information's there, and if not, there's contact information where they can get additional help. Draft documents. Any questions on the project schedule at this point, gentlemen? Okay. Draft schedule. We basically have this working outline set up. We start with an introduction. Chapter 2 is public input. Chapter 3, we change. It was goals
And goals and objectives, we changed it to the foundation, kind of building on the C2C plan, corner of Capstone theme, and that kind of thing. But that covers everything that's not covered. So there are all these planning principles that went into a comprehensive plan. Visions and goals, it's hard to see from here. Agricultural resources, community facilities, land use, emergency preparedness, housing, economic development, transportation, communications, public safety, infrastructure and utilities, intergovernmental coordination, cultural and natural resources. So a few of those in your guys' particular plan have been broken out. Land use is usually, in all of these kind of things, its own section, so that one's out on its own. We have conservation of natural resources and recreation, which was a separate piece of this. Those two pieces have been put into their own separate chapter, with which we'll cover here in a minute. And then economic prosperity, that economic development section of the Iowa Smart Planning and that kind of thing has been put in its own section as well. And then late in this process, we broke out transportation, just because there was enough stuff going on that it warranted another chapter and can be updated as such as you guys continue to use this plan in the future. All of that other stuff is in what we call the foundation piece, which covers goals, objectives, policies for those other elements that are important to understanding the context of the entire county, but didn't really warrant in this type of plan in their own chapters. They can be used together to build into the ultimate implementation of the plan and its adoption. We Appendix A is the community indicators. That's all of the background data, all of the nitty-gritty, you know, stuff that's important and that people might want to refer to if they start looking into the plan. Well, where did they get that data? Where did that come from? That's in the community indication. It's an appendix. It's at the end. It's very useful, but it doesn't get to the heart of what the plan is most of the time. So we put it in an appendix at the end so that it's available, but not a big part of it. Appendix D is the survey results, and that is in their unabridged version. I'll go over those, but basically that's all the responses from the surveys that we put out in their entirety as they sit. So if somebody were to say, well, I filled out a survey, I wanted to make sure my comments came in somewhere, send them to Appendix D. That is where they will find whatever they wrote in there, and their vote, in that sense, their survey would be in there. Existing plan summaries, we're still working on that section, but basically that's looking at all the county plans, all of the surrounding county comprehensive plans and all of the city comprehensive plans that we could find that they've adopted and had available to put in here. The other thing is Jerry and Ryan from the planning department and I can't remember.
Drew.
Thank you, Jerry. Drew went around to a few of the cities that are growing a little faster or are currently doing land use planning. They went to Story City, Maxwell, Huxley. Where else did you guys go? Nevada, Ames, Cambridge. Okay. Talk to all of them just in general about, hey, you know, we know you have this plan that's 5 years old. What do you guys really got going on? And so those summaries have been included in that section and are included in the future land use planning as well. Just because, and like, Story City just started an update to their plan. So it's kind of in flux. And as you know, the Ames Urban Fringe plan is currently being amended as well. So you're going to see that, and we'll address it as best we can through this process. Again, we create goals, objectives, and policy strategies. We start with that public engagement, which we did with the issues and opportunities meetings and all the surveys and all that kind of stuff. We build in these elements of the plan. Then we matched it to your guys's, the goals and objectives that you did with the growth-oriented sustainable infrastructure, economic prosperity, natural amenities, governance, leadership, and learning environments. You're kind of those pillars of your strategic planning and the kind of the cornerstone for this project. And we start in with these chapters. So these, again, this is not all of the pages in the chapter. It's just kind of to give you guys a general overline. But we start with the introduction. What is the plan? What is it used for? How is it organized? And there's some general milestones of the planning process, that kind of thing. And we also have some just general interesting demographics. You know, what are some of the population changes? What are some of the household, you know, ratios, demographics, that kind of stuff, in kind of interesting graphics, just to kind of give people an introduction to what data goes into the planning. Again, the full amount is in Appendix A, all of that data, but we put some highlights into this section. Then we go into the public input section, which basically summarizes the entire public input section, input part of the plan, starting with issues and opportunities, starting with the meeting we had with you guys at the beginning of the process, P&Z, the Citizens Task Force, all that kind of stuff. And this section will be updated even after we have those open houses in January and February, because obviously the public input is ongoing and will be not only throughout this process, but afterwards.
Sure.
Strengths and opportunities are laid out, issues, weaknesses, or threats, I guess, issues and threats, that kind of thing. We put in some general things about the youth survey, the other survey results. Then we move into the foundation, and again, I said this is those, all those other elements that are not represented in a separate chapter. We start a little bit with that, with the four foundational stones, as we ended up calling them, as part of that cornerstone planning, and then we talk about the sections and go over the goal summary for all of those. And again, this very well ties into, you had a group talk about housing. We addressed some housing and some of the things that they were mentioning are goals of this plan, you know, or the goals coincide with what kind of, not only what their goal is as, you know, an organization working for that, but also your goals as, yeah, we want to support, obviously, people living in the county being able to afford to do that. That kind of stuff is in here. The emergency preparedness is as well. You know, he talked about participating in training exercises as part of being able to be prepared for future disasters. That type of stuff is represented in here as well. Not only that the county should keep up on that, but that the policy would be to continue to provide support for staff. And that doesn't mean that you guys obviously still make decisions on a meeting-by-meeting basis. It's just there are elements of the plan that would allow you to make those decisions and refer to, yeah, we had this planning process and people said they wanted us to look into this, so we are. That's the general idea behind it. Go ahead, Jim.
Sure. So for the conservation of natural resources and recreations chapter, we begin with goals. Some of the key focuses in that are water quality, biodiversity of both plants and animals, recreation, so maintaining, improving, and expanding what we already have, preserving land, soil, and geologic resources, improving air quality, promoting environmental education, and identifying priority areas, so especially areas that are environmentally sensitive. We also reference the existing Story County strategic plan, and then we go into an inventory and analysis of the natural resources that are existing, and as well as conditions and needs that we need to go into. For the land use chapter, we also begin with goals. Some of the key focuses with that are identify and map areas for future development, which is done in the future land use plan, preserve and protect environmentally sensitive areas, consider capacity of services and infrastructure, evaluate short and long-term financial impacts, consider and develop open space buffers and greenways, preserving agricultural resources, as well as historical and cultural significant areas, and then also having gradual land use transitions. We then go into defining the land use designations. We also have a compatibility matrix that shows what land uses are consistent with zoning, as well as definitions, principles, and images for each. We also reference the urban fringe plan, and then we end with the existing land use plan as well as the future land use plan.
The economic prosperity chapter covers workforce and community patterns, covers basically potential industrial clusters. And again, we expect that a lot of the development is going to happen within, especially of this type, will happen unless it's agricultural industrial that doesn't have a high need of water or sewer services. It will likely happen within municipal boundaries because they're the ones who offer the sewer service for the most part. Rural water does provide some services, but maybe not at the capacity that some of these industrial plants need. But we do talk about some industrial clusters in there. We talk about key geographic areas for growth, which are along major transportation routes for the most part, and then go into existing economic development programs, just kind of a category of those. The underlying idea behind this whole chapter is Story County wants to be competitive. So we start out with kind of an analysis of what do we have, and then goes into where are some of our opportunities and where can we put, you know, where do we put our resources when we need to, and how to account for that. That's the general idea behind the chapter. And again, goals, objectives, policies at the end are generally an operative things that you can follow on it as you make decisions, as economic development makes decisions, the planning department makes decisions, and as future employers or existing employers, existing businesses look to expand, retain employees, that kind of thing, that they can use this chapter as well to remain competitive. Transportation, again, it started off as its own, but there's enough stuff in here and enough changing that it got pulled out. We start with the goals, objectives, and policies. We talk about all the assets. You know, you have the railroads, you have the interstate, you have major state highways, and you have a great county road system as well, county highway system. There are plan improvements. We talk about some of those in here, controversial or not. They are included in here. And then finally, Appendix A, community indicators report. Obviously, we have all that demographic information. We talk about, again, some of the information that's covered in the other ones in terms of housing and the economy of the county, demographics, that sort of stuff. Oh, yeah, and we talk about existing transportation networks, land uses, all that kind of stuff. Survey results, and I added a few slides in here. The project team said there were probably a couple that we had done at an earlier meeting that might be interesting. But again, this is the entire result. So it has kind of these graphic displays, as you can see on the right, and then the entire what people wrote for each one of those sections. Because not only was there an opportunity to say yes, no, I agree with this, there was also an opportunity to say other and write in what you wanted. All those are included. Some of the ones that I found were interesting, quality of life highlights. People live here because of quality schools. They like the rural, small-town atmosphere, the feeling, the character of the communities, and it's near their jobs. What quality of life things would they like to see change? And all the questions are kind of laid out in this sense for each one of those sections. Expanded retail, improving recreational opportunities, improving bike and pedestrian networks were some of the ones that scored high. We hit it. We actually did a pretty good job between two of our surveys hitting the age range. So you'll notice in this one that the under 18 didn't. This is just a regular survey, the community survey that went out. We had a really good response. We had a good response from everything but that younger generation. So we came out with a youth survey, which, again, is included in the results are included in this appendix, and they're summarized in Chapter 2. But we also would note that people who took the survey have kids. You know, the kids may have not have taken it, but as you can see from that kind of bell curve on the right there, we did get people, families, taking this that when they're making decisions and live in Story County and they're taking surveys and deciding where they're shopping, where they're working, you know, what they're doing for recreation, they have children and are thinking of them and that kind of thing. So that is represented within these survey results as kind of the family perspective. We got a lot of people from Ames took it. We kind of went over some of these results before, but a lot of the population is in Ames. So it's that's fairly representative. And again, that last slide there is just some of the results from the user survey. If you're bored and over the holidays and you feel like reading some interesting comments from the public that are pretty unfiltered, there's nothing. I mean, all of them are pretty interesting. You could browse through this, you know, and probably get an interesting idea other than what I can show you in a graphic of some ideas that people have. Appendix C, again, we'll go over the Ames Fringe Plan, we go over the community plans, we go over surrounding plans and the existing county plans, all the ones that have an impact on land use across the county, and then plan area and maps, and there are a ton of those as well, which are pretty interesting to look at, that Shannon did all of those. Good job, Shannon. These are drafts, of course, they're works in progress. They are in a good format. We still have photos and graphics to be added. We need to solidify some of the formats for consistency and figure out which kind of graphic representation we want to last throughout the thing. And then we have public house, public open house reviews to get in here. You have, the citizen task force final review, P&Z, the project team, and then you guys as well. So they're in a decent format in terms of the plan layout, but the graphic and photos and that kind of stuff will change as this goes on, as well as whatever content change we get over the next 6 months, 5 months.
Questions or comments?
As we embark on the public open houses and where we're showing the plan and so forth, are you envisioning
any editing of the existing plan based on some input we might receive. My question would be, would that be something that would come back to the committee at large prior to making a definite insertion? Because, you know, individuals who are late to the program oftentimes can say, all of them, why was this never included? Well, it may have been discussed, and there was a rationale why it wasn't included as specific mm-hmm. as that. And I'm talking about people who come late to the table oftentimes look for something specific. And so how do we plan to address that type of scenario that might happen?
In most of in these situations, I agree that happens all the time. Sometimes at the last minute, you guys will be looking to adopt this in June, or at least looking, you know, at, and there may be something that happened, some issue that came up, or some a person, like you said, that just caught wind of a piece, or something really touched them and they want to comment on it. That might happen. The process that we have with these open houses, hopefully, again, we did the issues and opportunities. There's the carry through. We have those open houses. We have a citizens task force meeting that's, again, an open meeting in February. The project team meetings are open meetings. People can voice their concerns there. Then we go into where we have a public workshop with PNC. I mean, all of these meetings are open, but that's a PNC meeting. It's not, they're not making a decision that evening. They're simply looking at the plan in its entirety, and it's a great opportunity for people to make comments, especially without the stress of, well, they're going to make a decision on this tonight. I have to have everything, you know, in order tonight, or I'm going to lose out. Not the case. It's a workshop. Then they do their, you know, public hearing and recommendation to you guys, and then you guys have a workshop as well.
Great. And I think that's the important part to underscore. And Chris, you and I have talked about this privately. I'll say it now, where we have it on the record and out there for everybody. The important thing to remember about this plan, a couple things. One, this board is the one with the final authority to approve or not approve this plan. It's also the one who is going to be able to have some input right at the end if something is not quite where we want it to be. Second thing to remember is this board is not, I feel confident in saying this, this board is not going to cede any of its authority or responsibility to any plan document. This plan document is intended as a guide to help us and others in the county make the decisions that they have to make. But it's important to realize that those decisions are not made in a vacuum. And so often a plan like this, and I know you guys have run up against this, and I've appreciated the way you've handled it, can turn into something of a Christmas tree where everybody wants to hang their specific item in a vacuum on that as the most important thing, as the item that needs to happen regardless of anything else. And what's important to recognize about this document is two things. It doesn't exist in a vacuum, and ultimately, whatever the plan says, the three people who are sitting up here, and I guess I should say three or more, because maybe someday Story County wants to go to more than three supervisors, but the Board of Supervisors is the authority that's going to make the decision, and hopefully we're going to have a living, breathing document in this plan that can help whoever's sitting here have the foundational items and the rationale to make those decisions. But again, it doesn't occur in a vacuum, and all of these things are dependent upon many, many other factors. And so is that an accurate representation of what you and I have talked about a couple times?
Absolutely, and I completely agree. You guys are the elected officials, and it's top, you know, that's what you get elected to make decisions, and this document will simply be a guide. It may help you make some difficult ones mm-hmm. with some public input behind it and some goals from across the county, and there will be other decisions that you'll make that may not fully be represented in here, but you know, we can't plan for everything, but we can plan for a lot of it, and that's what this document is.
Well, and so much of what we do, you know, the people that ask us for something, they are looking at their specific item. We just dealt with Asset today. Asset does a phenomenal job, but each one of those requester funding agencies, the people that need to be funded by Asset, they look at their specific need. We have to make the decisions global because the decision we make there is going to impact all kinds of different things down the road. This plan ought to help us recognize that those decisions do have implications to other things, and we've got to look at this thing more globally and hopefully give us direction. Like I said, I think you guys are doing a great job. I would be remiss if I didn't recognize Gary and Leanne. From our staff has done a phenomenal job, but specifically those two have really taken the lion's share of our staff work. But we are really appreciative that you guys are here. Love what you've done so far. I'm excited to see the final results as they start to solidify. And thank you.
Thank you. Leanne helped with all those public meetings, and the whole project team, Jerry and Leanne and everybody else, have been awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Public forum number two is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. The board can't take any action due to the open meetings law, but we might do it in the future. Anybody wishing to address us on anything? Seeing no one moving the microphone, liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Paul?
Pass.
Wayne?
Pass.
Announcements from supervisors. Paul?
Just a reminder that it will be Wayne and I next Tuesday, and then it will be a claims-only meeting on the 29th with the three of us, I think.
Yeah, which we'll do by phone.
Right.
And I will be at the ISAC board meeting, board of directors meeting on Wednesday, and then on Thursday, Paul is going to sit in for me with the regional governance board meeting, which will be held here at 1 o'clock.
Outstanding. Nothing for me. Take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Adjourn. Thanks, everybody.